books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio. For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Read On, the audiobook show recorded in association with RNIB Talking Books. I'm your host, Robert Kirkwood, and today we're spending the show in the garden as we return back to RHS Sandringham and hear all about the RNIB Talking Books garden. Plus, we'll find some brand new books in the RNIB library. The RNIB Talking Books Garden at RHS Sandringham celebrated both the incredible impact of gifts left in wills and also the 90th anniversary of RNIB Talking Books. It was a gold medal winner, it won the Best Show Garden, and it also won the Best Construction Award. Books hold a special place in our hearts, a quiet magic that ignites our imagination and creates vivid worlds with unforgettable characters. RNIB's free Talking Book service gives thousands of people with sight loss access to a huge range of fiction and non-fiction, from much-loved classics to educational texts. This garden took inspiration from the libraries of our imagination. We'll hear all about the design of the garden from the designer himself later on in the show. And as you walked round the garden, little gramophone-like speakers were playing sections from specially recorded RNIB Talking Books. We'll hear from them today too. But first, let's hear from Linda LaPlante. She spoke with our very own Toby Davey about why she recorded a special passage for the garden.
Following on from the great success of the RNIB Gold Medal Award-winning garden at the RHS Wentworth Woodhouse Flower Show 2025, the RNIB has been invited to create a garden for the RHS Sandringham Flower Show 2026, celebrating the 90th anniversary of RNIB Talking Books and the incredible impact that gifts left in wills have on the work that the RNIB does too. Award-winning garden designer Paul Harvey Brooks is working on the garden again, and as part of the garden, it will feature extracts from chosen authors' books too. I'm delighted to say that I'm now joined here on RNIB Connect Radio by best-selling crime writer Linda LaPlante, who has just recorded an extract from Buried, the first book in her Jack War series, for the RNIB Talking Books Garden at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show 2026.
Rose Cottage had lain empty for 8 months. It was a neat, two-storey, white stone building with thick, black, wooden lintels above the central front door and each of the five small windows. Three up, two down. On the more sheltered west side of the front wall, the ivy had completely taken over and was lifting the slates from the roof. But on the exposed east side, the stonework was bare and had been flattened by centuries of strong winter winds swirling down from the hills. From some angles, the cottage looked as though it was leaning to the left. As the cottage was rural, with stables and a hay barn, the land surrounding it had been fairly unkempt even before it was left empty. But a small area directly outside the front door had been landscaped into narrow, winding footpaths circling rose beds. The wild roses, left to their own devices, were still fighting against the changing seasons. But today, they looked particularly beautiful. In fact, they were the only real reminder of how lovely the cottage had once been.
Hello, Linda, and thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today here on RNIB Connect Radio.
My pleasure.
So, Linda, why did you choose to record an extract from Buried, the first book in the Jack War series, and why this particular passage for the RNIB Talking Book Starden at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show 2026? Because the passage, I think, gives a great description of Rose Cottage and its wonderful laid-out garden, which is destroyed during a fire. And there's also the discovery of a very burnt-out body, too, as well.
You know something, I just thought of all my books, it really is very, very descriptive, because I want you, when I'm describing the roses in the garden, to be able to remember what they smell like. And you could even be surrounded by the garden that you're listening to this in, by roses. And the terror of fire, how fast it moves. But something is a little bit, well, not a little bit, very strange. Who has built that bonfire inside that little cottage? Who has set it alight? And then the discovery after it has been absolutely shattered. By that time, I hope people listening will even smell fire, understand it, and then go, ooh, the body. Oh, my goodness. Who is it? How did it get there? And who built the bonfire? Inside, the furniture had been moved into the centre of the room, just in front of the hearth. A heavy wooden chest of drawers and two bookshelves surrounded by two-seater horsehair sofa, which had four occasional tables piled high on top of it. Some of the books from the bookshelves had been forced into the gaps of this makeshift bonfire, and the rest had been thrown into the hearth on top of a huge stack of paper. Suddenly, the small downstairs windows to the left and the right of the front door exploded under the immense pressure from the heat inside, sending glass and wood showering into the rose beds. Flames quickly took hold of the wooden lintels, and within seconds, smoke had blackened the white stone wall. The small lounge was soon consumed by flames, which rose to the ceiling beams and travelled to the wooden staircase and up the stairs. They eventually pushed their way out between the slates from the wooden ceiling beams beneath, and it wasn't long before a spark leapt across to the hay barn, still full of bales of hay for horses long gone. The barn went up like a Roman candle, and from that point onwards, there was no stopping the fire. Quarter of a mile away, in a small housing estate, the first of the 999 calls was made. Neighbours watched as dark brown smoke billowed into the clear blue sky. When the house had been occupied, the smoke from the chimney had always been the expected wispy light grey, but this was different. It looked heavy and rancid and just kept coming. Speculation was rife as to how the fire had started. Was it a tramp trying to keep warm? Was it kids taking their games too far? 14 999 calls were made in total, sending two fire engines racing towards Rose Cottage from the Aylesbury fire station. By the time they arrived, the interior of the cottage had almost gone, and the hay barn was a pile of rubble and ashes. However, the stables, which were furthest away from the cottage, were still fully ablaze. When the fire brigade arrived, they split into two teams, one to tackle the fire inside, and the second to the stables to prevent the flames from jumping to the woodland beyond. It was easier to gain control of the stables because once the wooden frames had gone, there was nothing left to fuel the fire. The interior of the cottage, however, kept reigniting as the fire found new fuel on the upper floor and from the wooden roof beams. It didn't take much to give the flames a new lease of life. By nightfall, the grounds resembled a muddy swamp, and the rose beds had been completely destroyed by hours of heavy fire boots. What was left of the furniture had been thrown into the front garden to avoid further reignition inside the property. So the once beautiful rose garden looked like a fly-tipping sight. "Stop!" the sub-officer shouted as he emerged through the hole that used to be the front door. "Nobody goes back inside." He reached for his phone and dialed emergency at his station. It was late, and the phone rang for quite some time before it was answered. And he could actually, very quietly, tell them the terrible news. They have found a charred body.
And it's great, the description, I think, just sort of brings that to life. And you can almost, as you say, smell and see and also sort of hear the fire crackling and the glass window smashing and everything else. I think you get a real sense of what's happening from the passage.
I hope so.
And obviously, the RNIB Talking Books Garden at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show 2026 is, of course, all about the 90th anniversary of RNIB Talking Books and, of course, about the great benefits of leaving a gift to the RNIB, which can help to support the work that the organisation does for blind and partially sighted people, including Talking Books. Linda, as an author, is it, I suppose, good for you knowing that your books are being made accessible to blind and partially sighted people through audiobooks?
Truthfully, honestly, I had never had any interest in audiobooks. I had not, I think, even paid any attention to even listening to one. And, you know, I'm pretty old. But at an e-book event, a woman in the audience, you know, and when I promote the books and I have a Q&A, this woman stood up and she said, "Have you ever had a Braille in your memoirs? Could I get it in Braille?" And that was the first kind of nudge that, no, I didn't even know. And I said to her, "I promise you, I know most of my books are in audio, but I'm really going to begin to make a big effort to see if I can get my memoir into Braille." This coincided because 2018, I'm very, very impulsive. I'm having a cataract operation. I had cataract operation in both eyes. It's almost unheard of to ever have both eyes done at the same time. But I was blind, and blind not just from the operation after a week, for 6 months. I have never known such fear and such dependency on everybody around me. I was walking into falling over steps. I couldn't find anything. The fear, and that was when somebody said, "Just try and relax, Linda. Listen to an audiobook, even one of your own. Just listen to them." That started it. And from then on, I can't tell you what it has meant to experience that, to understand the fear of what it's like to lose your sight, and to also understand the dependency and the love you're given and respect you're given by a company like this one. And I just wish you every good prayer I can think of.
And are there any books that you're reading at the moment that you would recommend for people to pick up and listen to via an audiobook?
Oh, yes. Listen, I tell you, read The Sphinx by Hugo Vickers. It's about a woman called Gladys Deacon, who lived a very long and full life and became the Duchess of Marlborough and lived part of her life at Blenheim Palace. It is a fascinating read. Listen and wait for an absolute amazing thing, because it's narrated by the author himself, and something very special happens at the end. The author, Hugo Vickers, visits Gladys, who was then in her 90s, and you actually get to hear her speak.
I think that's the thing about audiobooks, isn't it? It's when you get a good narrator, whether that's the author or it's an actor, and they can certainly bring a book to life, can't they?
Oh, what? Yes. Wonderful. Oh, I love this book.
Obviously, the RNIB Talking Books garden is going to be designed by award-winning gardener Paul Harvey Brooks. Linda, are you a gardener yourself, and do you enjoy sort of getting out into the garden and, I suppose, potting and tending to your plants and things?
Look, I love going into the garden, but I'm a kind of lethal. You know, I'm either pulling up beautiful plants and leaving the weeds. I have a big pond and I feed the birds every day. The sight of some of the most wonderful things in the garden, the birds, the insects, it's a joy. And it's quite a plushly big garden, but it's not very well manicured, I have to say, because I have dogs. And because of the weather, the rain, it's a bit muddy at the moment. But there comes a time, you know, soon, it's coming soon, when all the bulbs start coming up. And that's a very, very joyful time. So I wish I could be more experienced as a gardener. But, I mean, I think I'm best kept well out of it for doing any digging.
And there is nothing better than being out in a garden if you've got one, and being out in nature, or just going for a stroll in a local park, or just maybe going for a walk in the countryside. Because I think we can all sort of, I suppose, benefit from nature, can't we?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very fortunate because I live near Richmond Park. So not only did I have that on my doorstep, as well as my garden, I had a garden hut built, and I had to move a pond. And, you know, these companies, they call them pond hotels, and they come and they take your fish to a pond hotel whilst they're digging the new pond. And I had one very big fish called Boris. And somewhere along the line, Boris had a very crooked mouth. And this company, they came with their pack and they blew up a little kind of pond themselves out of a canvas. They scooped all the fish out, took them away to the fish hotel, and my new pond was built. And it took a long time. But then eventually they brought the fish back from the hotel. And there was one very similar in looks to Boris, but it wasn't Boris. And when I said, excuse me, that's not Boris, they said, oh, yes, it is. I said, no. It's got the wrong mouth. And he said, no, it's fine. I said, no, it's not Boris. Do you know, they would never admit they'd switched my fish. And eventually I decided not to bother doing anything. I just left poor Boris wherever he is. But I love watching them, feeding them. Everything there is, it's also, you know, good to share. If you can share what you have is good as well.
Finally, Linda, what would you like visitors to the RNIB Talking Books Garden at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show 2026 to come away with after exploring the garden and hearing the extract from Buried and other books that are being played out in the garden?
I think to be aware just what, you know, so many authors like myself are wanting to do to help everyone with sight impairment, because I think, you know, the written word is so beautiful. But now I'm beginning to understand the touch of it with the braille is also quite, quite special. And I wish everybody there, you know, you might as well say, oh, smell the roses. I know you all will. And I just wish you every happiness and that we are all gunning for you, really, everybody. And God bless you all and keep you safe.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Linda, for chatting with me today here on RNIB Connect Radio. And thank you so much for recording an extract from Buried for the RNIB Talking Books Garden at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show 2026.
Thank you so much, RNIB.
And thanks to both Toby and Linda LaPlante. Still to come, we'll hear what Richard Osman recorded for our garden at RHS Sandringham, and we'll hear from the designer. But now, let's head to the RNIB Library for some brand new books.
Thanks to the kind donations from many of UK's audio publishers, it can be hard to keep up with all the great new books entering the Talking Books Library. So here are two new gems. The Visionaries by James Holland was donated by Penguin Random House.
In 1913, New York City surpassed London to become the world's busiest port. Wall Street was the centre of the United States financial market, and Manhattan the most modern urban centre on the planet. It was also home to slums and extreme poverty, but that was not the point. Once immigrants saw the Statue of Liberty and passed through Ellis Island, the gateway to America, they could see with their own eyes a new world of possibility, progress, and modernity. There were more than 900 cinemas. There were motor cars, large advertising hoardings lit up by electricity, all garish colours and brightness. There were immense civic buildings, air conditioning, art galleries, and towering skyscrapers. And at 7:30 p.m. on the 24th of April 1913, President Woodrow Wilson, inaugurated as the 28th president just a month earlier, hit a button in the White House in Washington, D.C., 200 miles away, and the world's tallest building was suddenly and dramatically swathed in electric light.
Although the Second World War was still a long way from being won, even by early 1941, U.S. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was already planning for peace. America's entry into the war may still have been almost a year away, but he could already see the new world order that was needed to emerge from the smouldering ashes of Europe. The business of war was very quickly going to have to become the business of peace. 3 years later, under the guidance of his successor, President Harry S. Truman, the Marshall Plan would emerge, a forward-thinking combination of global philanthropy and canny self-interest, which kick-started unprecedented European growth and the chance for the world as a whole to rebuild after the ruinous catastrophe of war. James Holland's knowledge of the Second World War and its aftermath gives him unique insight into the far-reaching consequences of the financial policies of Roosevelt and Truman. The sustained period of economic stability they initiated delivered peace to the Western democracies for over 80 years.
Designed by Cass Gilbert and commissioned by the entrepreneur Frank Winfield Woolworth, creator and owner of nearly 600 nationwide five and dime stores, the Woolworth Building was 792 feet tall and towered majestically into the Manhattan sky. Who, seeing this, could possibly doubt the astonishing age of progress in which Americans now lived? Across the Atlantic, London might have been usurped as the busiest port in the world, but it remained the beating hub of the largest empire ever to have existed, and more to the point, the largest trading empire. Britain had global extra-imperial assets and interests beyond the boundaries of her empire. It meant that London was a truly multi-ethnic melting pot, but also the epicentre of the world's money. Free trade and a free gold market, noted The Economist in January 1913, are two of the key different advantages which we enjoy over all our competitors, and the chief means by which London maintains itself as the banker and financier of the universe. It also meant the city was awash with exoticism amid the smoke, soot and grime. And although a far older city in a far older nation than New York in the United States, it was also a metropolis seemingly on an upward trajectory of progress. The world was an inherently unstable place, and yet there had been peace, for the most part, throughout Europe for almost a century. Those who had fought through the long and bitter Napoleonic Wars had all long since gone, and while there had been plenty of colonial skirmishes and wars in far-flung places around the globe, and even revolutions and brief wars in Europe, the vast majority in the continent had existed in a state of peace since Napoleon was vanquished at Waterloo in June 1815.
The Visionaries, America and the Post-Second World War Dream, by James Holland, is narrated by Al Murray, and runs for 6 hours and 4 minutes.
The Wartime Book Club by Kate Thompson was donated by Hodder.
Grace Lamotti considered herself very lucky to be the acting chief librarian of St. Helier Public Library, or as it was known to most, the Bibliothèque Publique. One of the oldest libraries in the British Isles, established in 1736, as she was very proud to tell anyone who would listen, and those that wouldn't. It was her very own book-lined palace of dreams. Perhaps in the current climate, palace was overstating it. These days, everything was subject to rationing, and even their book stock had been severely depleted by the Germans' idea of what constituted an affront to the Third Reich. Shortly after the invasion, they had received a directive from the Feldkommandantur informing them the library would soon be visited for a full evaluation of stock and that all banned books must be turned over. She and Ash had weeded out most of the verboten, forbidden books, hiding them in a secure place, leaving some behind as collateral damage so the Germans hadn't suspected. They had come back, of course, 3 months after the invasion, and again last year, little grey men with rat-like faces, and stripped yet more. More authors, uncongenial to the Nazi regime, had vanished from the stacks. The expurgation didn't end there. Montague Burton's, the Jewish tailors on the corner of King Street, had also received a visit. It didn't sell suits any longer, but was now a German bookshop. Mein Kampf and Famine in England were advertised in the window display under swastikas. It was so offensive that each time Grace walked past, she instinctively turned the other cheek.
Jersey, 1943. When the German army invades the Tranquil Island, librarian Grace Lamotte is determined to keep her services running. Ordered to destroy books which threaten the Nazi regime, she refuses, instead hiding them away and fighting back by forming a book club, a lifeline to help islanders escape the terror of war, one chapter at a time. But soon Grace's quiet acts of bravery become even more perilous. She's harbouring dangerous secrets, ones that put her life in danger, and when tensions turn to violence, she's forced to face the true, terrible cost of resistance. Based on astonishing real events, the Wartime Book Club is a love letter to the power of books in the darkest of times, as well as a moving page-turner that brings to life the remarkable untold story of an island at war.
Grace flicked her duster over the stacks and sighed. Not that they were faring much better. Her poor bookshelves looked like a smile with missing teeth. Jack London, H.G. Wells, John Steinbeck, Sigmund Freud and Ernest Hemingway all gone. Anyone considered by the Germans to be a dangerous, disruptive influence. "But you're still here, my old friends," she said, smiling as she ran her finger down the spine of Pride and Prejudice and the very last Agatha Christie, which had been delivered to the island on the mailboat before the Germans arrived, cards on the table. Agatha looked down at her knowingly. 800 new books, the lifeblood of a library, were delivered yearly. But no more. This last book from England had had more loans than any other over the past 3 years. When the war was over, Grace was tempted to write to Agatha Christie to tell her how her books had escaped a Nazi cull, unlike so many others.
The Wartime Book Club by Kate Thompson, is narrated by Imogen Church, and runs for 16 hours and 30 minutes.
For more information, head to rniblibrary.com or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999.
And Ms. Newbooks herself, Lynn Livingston, was at RHS Sandringham. Here's what she said to our very own Toby Davey.
Well, I'm back at the RNIB Talking Books Garden at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show here on RNIB Connect Radio. And I've just bumped into a familiar voice for RNIB Connect Radio. It's Lynn Livingston, who is the Collections Development Officer for RNIB's Reading Services. Lynn, you've been standing welcoming people to the garden. And just give me a little bit of a flavour of what people have said about the garden so far.
Well, everybody is absolutely blown away by it. The imagination that has gone into this garden is incredible because we have so many different aspects of reading actually involved in the garden. We have shingled walls that look like books. We have library ladders. We have bricks that look like the spines of books. We have grasses that whisper like the turning of pages, and covering on the ground that sounds like librarians going shh.
And I suppose in this year where we are celebrating 90 years of RNIB Talking Books, which is quite an achievement for the service, and to think that the service goes back 90 years as well.
Well, it is incredible to think that we started out with these big, heavy shellac gramophone records, and now that people can get them on download and Alexa, as well as on disc and USB. Technology is a wonderful thing, and we now have over 54,000 books in the library. I add books every single week. We get 400 a month go in the library, and they are the newest bestsellers. So if somebody is looking for a book, there is a good chance that we've probably got it now.
Exactly, and it's so good. I mean, it's a free service as well, so that's even better. And anything about the garden that's really sort of impressed you? Because as you say, there's loads of structures here, different plantings and stuff, but is there one thing that sort of sticks in your mind?
Well, for me, I don't know anything about flowers at all. So the only thing that strikes me is how incredibly beautiful it is. And the contrast, so you have the dark flowers against the light ones. So for people with low vision, you know, you have that contrast that can really help them visualise what is actually around them.
And I suppose, Lynn, what would you like people to come away with after coming to visit the RNIB Talking Books Garden, the Gold Medal Talking Books Garden?
I love the fact that they get to meet us, which means that I have already spoken to lots and lots of people and told them about our service. They weren't aware of it. They now know, oh, I've got a relative that could really use it. I've given them all the information. And I've actually met people who use the service themselves, and they are so happy to meet me. And it's wonderful. It makes me want to cry because I just to see their reaction. It makes all the hard work so, so worthwhile.
And books can give a real pleasure to people who are blind or partially sighted as well.
Absolutely. I mean, they are a friend in the house for people who are oftentimes alone. So it is a wonderful service, and I am so grateful to be part of it.
Well, Lynn, thank you very much indeed for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
My pleasure.
Lynn talked there about the design of the RNIB Talking Books Garden. So let's hear from the designer himself.
Welcome to the RHS Flower Show. We hope you have a wonderful day.
You join me here on RNIB Connect Radio, and we are at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show 2026 in the RNIB Talking Books Garden, Gold Award winning Talking Books Garden, and I'm with Paul Harvey Brooks, the designer of the garden. Paul, let's have a little bit of a, I suppose, walk, but just before we do, just tell me what it's like actually, because we've won a gold already.
Yeah, we won gold yesterday, which was really nice because it's our second garden together, my making gardens for the RNIB, and our second consecutive gold, so that's really thrilling.
And it's nice because we can actually hear some of the parts of the garden behind us. We've got the bits of books being played through sort of old gramophones, which look absolutely lovely actually.
Yeah, so the gramophone really hints back to the origins of the Talking Book Service, these gramophone recordings made after the Great War. And so we've just reimagined it as something you can put your mobile phone in, so you can listen to an audio file as a group of people, rather than, as we've got used to, putting it in our ears and being quite solitary with it.
That's really nice. And the other features, shall we just have a little walk around?
Yeah. So it's basically made, I hope, to feel like a library in a garden. So the hard surfaces are either brick or this kind of bound gravel material, which is quite muted as a sound. So it's like the kind of hush of the library.
We've got an airplane going over at the moment, but you can actually, I can feel the sort of gravel underneath my feet, which is really nice and tactile.
Yeah, and then the next surface is these bricks, which is quite rectilinear. And then we're very close to these large walls, which are made out of shingle. I just tap it, it's wood. But they're all rectilinear. They're all made to, and they're quite sinuous, and they have these big ladders above them, which is representative of the kind of 19th century libraries where they had those, you know, these enormous fonts of knowledge with these big ladders. So we've gone for that to make it feel like a library, and it's very sinuous. And then all around us is a lot of very heavy grass rich planting, and the reason for that is because it rustles slightly when it's quiet, which it won't be during show week, but if we could be here in the evening, it just rustles very, very quietly. And it's a little bit like when you're in a library and you hear somebody going shh. It's got that kind of
it's always that whisper, shush, shush,
yes,
shush,
yeah,
in the library.
Yeah, it's got that. So that's kind of it, really.
And the nice thing is, also, there's lots of silver birch trees in the garden as well.
Yeah, so silver birch and hazel both can be used to make paper. So I wanted the trees to directly link to, like, the origins of books. And then I really wanted everything else to say that, you know, books started in paper, but the audio file, the talking book service, is really important. And it's not like any other audio file service. That's what I want people to understand. Like, show coming visitors won't know that much about talking books. And I really want them to understand that it's not just like soft fiction for a holiday. It's about people who need textbooks, educational books, scientific papers. It's all of those things as well. And it's such an important thing. And I hope that just by walking through, people can think about that a little bit.
And tell me a little bit about the planting, the different plants that are in the garden, because some of them are sort of quite bright colours as well and lots of smells.
Yeah, so I tried very hard to make sure that there was a, you know, quite clear contrast between the greens and the different colours and sequences. So it would just be easier for somebody who were visually impaired to kind of read the planting. And apart from that, we kind of really centred on things which would rustle against each other, even though it's difficult to hear it now. For the judges, of course, it's dead quiet, so when they were here, they would get that. But yeah, it's really just to make it feel very soft, very relaxed, somewhere that you might want to just sit down and listen to a book.
And I believe there's sort of elements of what I suppose are sort of the old library sort of trolleys that are in part of the garden as well.
Yeah, so we've kind of made them as these dead hedges. And normally dead hedges are quite ugly because you just put some sticks and lay the twigs. But we tried to make them look a little bit like the returns trolley in a library, which is quite cubic and quite low. And it's just humourful. I don't want people to think, oh, it's like an actual representation of a library. I want them to think, oh yeah, I can see how that has inspired that, and just make it feel quite comfortable.
And it's great because we are in a very good place here, the garden, right at almost the entrance, and we've got Mary Magdalene Church behind us as well, and your ladders, I think, go up about 20 feet or something.
Yeah, they are very tall ladders. But it's metaphorical. I really, as a broader thing, as a designer, I wanted to be able to say, like, learning in general allows you to go anywhere. So really, these ladders point up to the sky, and it's kind of saying, look, the sky's the limit. However, you know, if you learn by reading, by watching, by listening, any of those mediums, you're going to have so much more than what you started with.
And thinking again, going back to the planting, did you sort of, in a way, think about, you know, the climate that we're in at the moment? We've had all these heat waves. Did that influence the type of plants that you wanted to have in the garden?
Well, it did on two fronts. One, because the show is supposed to be educational to gardeners, so that was important. But also, just like really selfishly for us, we want to get gold for the RNIB. So, and I want to make sure that we're not buying the same plant three or four times to make it show quality. So that becomes about choosing plants that can cope with the stresses of repeated heat and cooling. So in fact, we had very minimal losses against other people that were really panicking about their planting.
Well, that was quick thinking, I suspect.
I think we were lucky, but there was an element of planning, because I just want to make sure that this represents something which is inspirational, but also something where we're being really conscious about what's going on in the moment.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing at the moment. We've all got to think about our gardening for the future and how the climate is getting warmer. And we've had all these heat waves, but also thinking about plants that will do well in these sort of climates that we're going to be in. When I look at my garden, my lawn is sort of brown and not sort of very nasty at the moment, and I'm trying to keep my roses alive, which are just about alive. But I think that's something which we've all got to think about.
100%. I recently moved house. We haven't started work on the garden, but I did think to myself, actually, where I live, well, it's near my parents, so I know well for the past 5 years their lawns died every summer. So I'm just like, I'm not going to bother. I'm going to design a garden where I don't have grass, because it either requires a lot of water, which, you know, increasingly hosepipe bans means it, you can't do, or I'm going to be using the water I am storing on the grass rather than the plants. So I think we all have to start making conscious decisions about how to, like, minimise the labour and the resources that the garden needs and still have it looking beautiful.
And what would you like visitors, obviously today at the press day, but to join the public days here at Sandringham, to take away with from visiting the garden and listening to the audio?
Well, I think the thing which struck me when I was first asked to think about it was I didn't know there was a talking book service. And there's so many people already that I've spoken to, like, oh, I didn't know it started with the RNIB, I didn't know they did that. So for me, I want people to not only walk through and think, oh, I didn't know that, but I want them to go away and think, how can I help that continue?
Well, Paul, thank you very much indeed for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio, and I hope we might get maybe a few more medals during the week.
Fingers crossed. Fingers definitely crossed, but I'm going to touch wood now just to make sure that that happens.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
I'm with Leslie and Sue, who've just been around the garden. So just give me a little bit of your thoughts and reflections on how you found the garden.
I thought it was absolutely wonderful. The planting was beautiful, and the structures representing the library books were just gorgeous. And the ladder's brilliant.
We enjoyed the colour. We were interested in the colour schemes because our dad had macular and he liked the yellows. But although there were a lot of purples, there were the yellows as well, which were the bits that he could see.
And do you have any relatives who've been using talking books at all?
Yes, our dad had macular degeneration. He used talking books for at least 15 years. Can't remember exactly how long. He died in March this year. But he became completely blind, and they were a lifeline for him, the books.
I think that's true, because myself, as somebody who's visually impaired, I love audio books. I listen to them on my commute, and it just takes you into another world, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes, when he was in the home, they could all hear the books because he had them on so loud that everybody could listen to the stories up and down the corridor that he was on. But when he moved out from his house into the home, it was so easy. I just rang up the number on the talking books envelopes, and they transferred the delivery to the home straight away. There was no fuss or faff. It was excellent.
And anything from the garden that you might be taking into your own gardens?
I do like the wooden ladders, and I think we've got some of those kicking around, but whether husband would approve of them, I don't know. We like the pops of colour. We like the pops of bright colour, don't we?
We do, yes. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Leslie and Sue, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
You do a wonderful service. Yes.
Well, we are back at the RNIB Gold Medal award-winning garden, the Talking Books Garden here at the RHS Sandringham Flower Show. And I'm with Anne, who's just come out from having a walk around the garden. Anne, just tell me a little bit about your, I suppose, reactions, reflections on the garden.
I think it's lovely, and I like the way that it symbolises the talking books and a library situation. And also, the thing I've learned today is that purple is a colour that people with difficulty seeing is something they can see, where the reds and oranges perhaps don't stand out amongst the greens so much.
And any particular sort of structure from the garden? Because there's some wonderful things. There's the old sort of replica gramophones and things like that. Were they interesting to maybe look at and touch and hear the audiobooks coming through them?
Well, it was really, yes, because both my grandfather and my father used the talking book service. Both of them had sight loss with macula. I can't remember whether it was dry or wet, but at the time it was just called macular degeneration. So, yes, it was useful to see the progress from the initial tapes right the way through to, I presume, CDs nowadays.
Yeah, CDs and I think downloads and memory sticks.
Yes, all sorts of stuff now, yes.
And are you a gardener yourself?
I am, yes. I believe the plants here are going to Tapping House afterwards. And I know people who volunteer there, and I volunteered my services if they require it.
Well, that's a really lovely connection, isn't it, to know that the garden's going to have another life.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. That's good. And it's just a nice collection of plants and the grasses and everything, which I think helps.
Yeah, and I think also being in a garden, there's nothing better than being outdoors, you know, sort of around nature, around plants and stuff for, you know, sort of, I suppose, your mental health, as one might say.
Yeah, and anybody outside, I mean, just having your hands in the soil has got to be a positive for anybody once you've realised that it is a positive, I suppose, yes. And growing things is just something special.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Anne, thank you very much indeed for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
I've been involved in the Talking Book Service for a long time, since I was just starting out as an actor.
Julian Fellows on supporting Talking Books.
I suppose what draws me to it is that my whole life has been based around the word, you know, as an actor and then a screenwriter and a novelist and everything else, and the thought of being deprived of the word is terrifying to me. But also what it is really crucial to the Talking Book Service is it makes blind people autonomous. You want to get back some of the pleasures that you knew before, and the one that can come back 100% unqualified is reading a book, and that is because of the Talking Book Service.
Talking Books on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, you join me here on RNIB Connect Radio, and it's day two of the RHS Sandringham Flower Show, and obviously our gold medal award-winning RNIB Talking Books Garden is going to be visited by many people today. And I'm with Helen Smith, who's the head of supporter experience at RNIB. And I think, Helen, the concept for this garden was pretty much your idea, I think.
Well, it's very kind of you to say so, but yes. So what I wanted was, I had a vision for a library in a garden, or a garden made out of a library. And luckily, working with the wonderful Paul Hervey Brooks, who we've worked with before, as you know, Toby, he's able to take those ideas and turn them into something absolutely fantastic. And as you say, award-winning.
It's fantastic. I mean, we're hoping for maybe another award, possibly for People's Choice, hopefully, if people do support it and click on. But, I mean, the garden obviously is celebrating 90 years of Talking Books, and also the incredible gifts and wills that are left of the RNIB and that legacy as well. So in many ways, it's doing two things here. But there has been really good response from people visiting the garden yesterday.
Absolutely, yes. We had almost 3,000 people just through the garden yesterday, so we were able to talk to all of them about the work that RNIB does and the fantastic service that's provided by Talking Books. You know, over 1 million every year sent out to people, and giving people that comfort and company and bringing the joy of reading to people who perhaps can't read print. They can enjoy books in exactly the same way as other people and get that closeness, you know, that sort of, the joy of reading, I suppose.
And especially as well as being outside and listening to an audiobook as well, and being in the garden, being out in nature as well, is always sort of good as well.
Absolutely. And of course, what sets Talking Books apart is that it's not just those stories. We actually have the non-fiction, scientific papers, magazines, so on and so forth. So there's really something for everybody, including lots of educational texts as well.
And the nice thing about the garden, it gives people an idea about obviously what the RNIB does and Talking Books, but there's some lovely elements. You've got the replica vintage gramophones, and people are listening to extracts from various books played through an iPhone through the gramophone as well. So there's a nice touch of linking up that sort of history and modern technology that we all use today to listen to books.
Absolutely. And I think that it is, you're right, it's a nod to nostalgia, isn't it? Because, of course, the first Talking Books went out on gramophone records. And so we really wanted to link that in, where we'd got a bit of the history, a bit of that legacy, really, of the gramophone, you know. And we talk about legacy. Obviously, as you said earlier, Gifts in Wills really help us provide this service, along with people who support us in so many different ways. So it's absolutely joyful to see people's reaction to that link between old and new, and also to know that we're having that impact thanks to those supporters.
And also, I think the garden is again supported by players of the Postcode Lottery as well.
It is, and we're so grateful to them. The Postcode Lottery have made this garden possible, and we hope that, you know, we've won gold, we've won Best Show Garden, we've won Best Construction, and we hope that we've really done the Postcode Lottery proud, because without them, this simply wouldn't be possible.
And just finally, what sort of comments were people saying to you as they were sort of going round the garden yesterday?
People were really engaging with parts of it. So we have the tall ladders in the garden, which I really wanted because I've always been obsessed with those ladders in posh libraries that spin round. But these ladders, they stand out high above the garden, and they're sort of symbolic as well about, you know, the more you learn, the higher you can go, but also to show that sight loss shouldn't be a barrier to how far people can go in life. We've also got the book walls, which are made from tiles of wood, which look a bit like shingle, but they smell of cedar. And I've had everybody sniffing the walls as they've gone around because they do smell like dusty old bookshops and libraries. So if you see people sniffing walls, it's my fault.
Well, Helen, thank you very much indeed for chatting with me again here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you, Toby. Always a pleasure.
And finally, on today's RHS Sandringham Talking Books Garden Special. Throughout the garden, there were little gramophone-type speakers that were playing clips of audiobooks and some things that were specially recorded. You heard Linda LaPlante's message earlier. Also, you can hear clips from blind author Lucy Edwards and from Bill Bryson talking about his garden in his book At Home. But here's something to end the show that Richard Osman recorded exclusively for RNIB.
Hello, RNIB. It's Richard Osman here, the author of the Thursday Murder Club books. Now, I've been asked to read a couple of chapters of the Thursday Murder Club, the first novel in the Thursday Murder Club series. And I never read my own books for a number of reasons. Firstly, my books are sort of written in the voice of an 80-year-old woman, and I'm never quite sure if I can pull that off. But secondly, every time I read them, I want to change the words. I want to edit them. But I'm not going to do that. And I'm also not going to do the voice of an 80-year-old woman. You'll be delighted to hear. But as someone born with a visual impairment who listens to audiobooks endlessly, because books are too difficult for me to read, it is my absolute pleasure to help celebrate 90 years of talking books. And so I'm going to read the first chapter for you. This is absolutely exclusive. Please don't tell anyone I'm doing this. They'll all want it. So from me to you, here is the first chapter of the very first book of the Thursday Murder Club. Chapter 1. Joyce. Well, let's start with Elizabeth, shall we, and see where that gets us. I knew who she was, of course. Everybody here knows Elizabeth. She has one of those three-bed flats in Larkin Court. Is the one on the corner with the decking? Also, I was once on a quiz team with Stephen, who, for a number of reasons, is Elizabeth's third husband. I was at lunch. This is 2 or 3 months ago, and it must have been a Monday because it was shepherd's pie. Elizabeth said that she could see I was eating, but wanted to ask me a question about knife wounds, if it wasn't inconvenient. I said, not at all, of course, please, or worse to that effect. I won't always remember everything exactly. I might as well tell you that now. So, she opened a manila folder, and I saw some type sheets and the edges of what looked like old photographs. Then, she was straight into it. Elizabeth asked me to imagine that a girl had been stabbed with a knife. I asked what sort of knife she had been stabbed with, and Elizabeth said, probably just a normal kitchen knife, John Lewis. She didn't say that, but that was what I pictured. Then, she asked me to imagine this girl had been stabbed 3 or 4 times just under the breastbone. In and out, very nasty, but without severing an artery. She was fairly quiet about the whole thing because people were eating, and she does have some boundaries. So, there I was, imagining stab wounds, and Elizabeth asked me how long it would take the girl to bleed to death. By the way, I realise I should have mentioned that I was a nurse for many years, otherwise none of this will make any sense to you. Elizabeth would have known that from somewhere because Elizabeth knows everything. Anyway, that's why she was asking me. You must have wondered what I was going on about. I will get the hang of writing this, I promise. I remembered dabbing at my mouth before I answered, like you see on television sometimes. It makes you look cleverer. Try it. I asked what the girl had weighed. Elizabeth found the information in her folder, followed her finger, and read out that the girl had been 46 kilos, which threw us both because neither of us was sure what 46 kilos was in real money. In my head, I was thinking it must be about 23 stone. 2 to 1 was my thinking. Even as I thought that, though, I suspected I was getting mixed up with inches and centimetres. Elizabeth let me know that the girl definitely wasn't 23 stone, as she had a picture of her corpse in the folder. She tapped the folder at me before turning her attention back to the room and said, "Will somebody ask Bernard what 46 kilos is?" Bernard always sits by himself on one of the smaller tables nearest the patio. It is table 8. You don't need to know that, but I will tell you a bit about Bernard. Bernard Cottle was very kind to me when I first arrived at Cooper's Chase. He bought me a clematis cutting and explained the recycling timetable. They have 4 different coloured bins here. 4! Thanks to Bernard, I know that green is for glass and blue is cardboard and paper. As for a red and black, though, your guess is still as good as mine. I've seen all sorts as I've wandered about. Someone once put a fax machine in one. Bernard had been a professor, something in science, and had worked all around the world, including going to Dubai before anyone had heard of it. True to form, he was wearing a suit and tie to lunch, but was, nevertheless, reading the Daily Express. Mary from Ruskin Court, who was at the next table, got his attention and asked how much 46 kilos is when it was at home. Bernard nodded and called over to Elizabeth. 7 stone, 3 and a bit. And that's Bernard for you. Elizabeth thanked him and said that sounded about right, and Bernard returned to his crossword. I looked up centimetres and inches afterwards, and at least I was right about that. Elizabeth went back to her question. How long would the girl stabbed with a kitchen knife have to live? I guessed that, unattended, she would probably die in around 45 minutes. Well, quite, Joyce, she said, and then had another question. What if the girl had had medical assistance? Not a doctor, but someone who could patch up a wound. Someone who'd been in the army, perhaps. Someone like that. I've seen a lot of stab wounds in my time. My job wasn't all sprained ankles. So I said then, well, she wouldn't die at all. Which she wouldn't. It wouldn't have been fun for her, but it would have been easy to patch up. Elizabeth was nodding away and said that was precisely what she had told Ibrahim. Although I didn't know Ibrahim at the time. As I say, this was a couple of months ago. It hadn't seemed at all right to Elizabeth, and her view was that the boyfriend had killed her. I know this is still often the case. You read about it. I think before I moved in, I might have found this whole conversation unusual, but it's pretty par for the course once you get to know everyone here. Last week, I met the man who invented mint choc chip ice cream, or so he tells it. I don't really have any way of checking. I was glad to have helped Elizabeth in my small way, so decided if I might ask a favour. I asked if there was any way I could take a look at the picture of the corpse, just out of professional interest. Elizabeth beamed. The way people around here beam when you ask to look at pictures of their grandchildren graduating. She slipped an A4 photocopy out of her folder, laid it face down in front of me, and told me to keep it, as they all had copies. I told her that was very kind of her, and she said not at all, but she wondered if she could ask me one final question. Of course, I said. Then she said, "Are you ever free on Thursdays?" And that, believe it or not, was the first I had heard of Thursdays.
That's all we've got time for on today's show. We'll be back at the same time next week. But if you can't wait that long, this and over 450 other episodes of Read On are available to download as a podcast. Just search for RNIB Read On in your favourite podcast app. But remember our daily show, Talking Books, featuring the best the RNIB library has to offer, that we're allowed to play on here. That's every day at 2 p.m. or 10 p.m. if you prefer a book at bedtime. The whole schedule is at rnib.org.uk/connect-radio.
Books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio.